to see you tonight. We do have visitors, and as always, we are appreciative of your being here. Glad to have everyone present and ready to study the Bible. And we're going to be looking tonight at the book of Daniel and some things from Daniel that Daniel is a fascinating book to me for so many reasons. One of them is its apologetic value. It contains some of the greatest internal evidences for the existence of God and the inspiration of the Bible that you'll ever find in the prophetic section. The other value of Daniel is what we want to focus on tonight. That is, it has some immense practical value as far as character development and our becoming the kind of people that God wants us to be. Three passages that I want to look at the outset to set the tone for what we want to do tonight. In chapter 9 and verse 23, I'm not going to read obviously the whole context of this. At the beginning of your supplications, the command was issued, and I had come to tell you, this was the heavenly messenger that had come to Daniel. And I had come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed. So give heed to the message and gain understanding of the vision. In chapter 10 and verse 11, he said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I am about to tell you and stand upright. For I have now been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then finally in chapter 10, verse 19, he said, O man of high esteem, do not be afraid. Peace be with you. Take courage and be courageous. And now as soon as he spoke to me, I received strength and said, May the Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Very obviously, those three passages have that in common. Daniel was called a man of high esteem. Highly esteemed by who? Well, certainly I think he was highly esteemed by, as we'll see later in our study, he was highly esteemed by those that he associated with. Those who were his contemporaries highly esteemed him, but I don't think this is the significance in the passages that we just looked at. I don't think that's the thing that's addressed. We're talking here about a man who was highly esteemed by God. How would you like to have that said about you? God addresses you through one of his heavenly messengers. And he says about you, O man, O woman, of high esteem. I can't think of any compliment that would be any greater than that. Daniel is not mentioned in the New Testament but once by name in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. Jesus called him the prophet. He was talking here about the destruction of Jerusalem. And even though that is a very short phrase, when you understand what a prophet was, go back to the book of Deuteronomy, other places, how you can tell a prophet. If the thing that the prophet foretold had not come to pass, you wouldn't be afraid of it. So here you have, in chapter 24, verse 15, kind of getting off the subject a little bit, if you want to go back to the prophecies of Daniel and wonder if you should take them seriously, should you take Daniel seriously as a prophet? And should you take his prophecy seriously? Matthew 24, 15 says absolutely yes. Jesus called him a prophet. Jesus, by implication here, is saying that what Daniel foretold, the claims that he made to be a prophet, and the things that he foretold, came to pass, and therefore he had the approval of heaven. Then in chapter 11, verse 33 of the Hebrew letter, the writer of that letter in talking about those who were the faithful that he was holding up as an example, he doesn't mention Daniel by name, but he does allude to him when he talks about those who shut the mouths of lions. Now, there were probably others who did that. There were probably others who were subjected to a lion's den kind of treatment. But in this context, I'm quite sure that the Hebrew writer had Daniel in mind. And he was one of the faithful who shut the mouths of lions. In chapter 12 and verse 1, nothing is said in chapter 11 about emulating the example of those Old Testament people that are mentioned in Hebrews 11. But in chapter 12, it's pretty clear. Therefore, that is, based upon what we just got through talking about in chapter 11, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses, some of those were named, and then people like Daniel and others were alluded to and included in that great cloud of witnesses. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. The writer is saying here, take a look at those who were mentioned and those that were alluded to in the latter part of the chapter, and use those as an example. They are, as it were, they constitute a great cloud of witnesses. And just as they laid aside every encumbrance, just as they ran the race with endurance, so we are to do the same. And so by implication here, in chapter 12, we're told that we need to become familiar with those in chapter 11 and imitate the way that they lived and do the things that they did. Sometimes, I think we get the impression that as we look at these Bible characters, whoever they may be, men and women who were great in their faith, there's no way I could ever be as great as Abraham. There's no way I could ever be as great as Daniel. No way I could ever be as great as Esther or Ruth or whoever. But unless I've misunderstood my Bible, I don't think I can be saved unless I'm as great as they were. Unless I have the faith of Abraham and all of those other people, including Daniel, then I'm in jeopardy. I can be like them. I can have that kind of faith. I can emulate that example. And so, as we take a look at Daniel tonight, we're just asking the question, what was it that made Daniel this man of high esteem? What was it about him that caused this heavenly messenger to speak on behalf of God and those three times refer to Daniel as a man of high esteem? Well, as you read through the book of Daniel, to me, it's pretty clear. There are some things that are said about Daniel that make it very, very clear why he was called a man of high esteem. And all the things that we're going to look at tonight, every single one of them, are not beyond our reach. They're not beyond our grasp. We can be just like Daniel, and we can be men and women of high esteem, just as Daniel was. First of all, and here's where it starts. Daniel was a man of high esteem. He was esteemed highly by God because of his attitude toward God. And as I said, this is where being a person of high esteem starts. If I want the approval of God, then I'm going to have the right attitude toward God. Now let's take a look at some things that are said about Daniel that illustrate the fact that he indeed had the kind of attitude toward God that caused God to pay him this great compliment. For one thing, he sought wisdom from God. Daniel wanted to be a wise man. He wanted to know, in this context, He wanted to know how it was he could interpret the dream of the king. And he realized that if he was going to do that, he was going to have to get the wisdom required for that from God. Look at chapter 2 and beginning with verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. And then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel said, "Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever. For wisdom and power belong to him. It is he who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and power. Even now you have made known to me what we requested of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter." That is the interpretation of the dream. Now this may seem like, and a lot of these things that we look at tonight may seem very obvious to us. But when it comes down to actually doing these things, I wonder sometimes if we don't miss it. You want to be a wise person? You want to be as knowledgeable as you possibly can be about things that can help you live a good life here and send you to heaven. Well, where do you go? To the religious bookstore. And very quickly, let me say, I spent a lot of time in religious bookstores, and I acquired quite a library over the years. Have nothing against reading what other men have to say about Bible matters. Let me suggest something to you. If you really want to be wise, as a parent, as a husband, or as a wife, there's one book that you need. And that's it. That's the Bible. And let me put in my plug for the book of Proverbs. If you want to be the kind of mother, the kind of father that you ought to be, you take the book of Proverbs and you commit it to your learning. And you'll be the kind of person that you need to be. Years ago, I was at a place, and it was a friend who was having, he and his wife were having horrible, horrible marriage problems. They were separated, and he was just at a loss for what to do. And he called me one night, and he was excited. And he said that he had discovered the solution to his problem. And he had found out what he needed to do. And he said, "I want you to come over to the house, and I want to share it with you." So I went over to his apartment, and I walked in, and he had on the coffee table in front of his couch, he had all kinds of books laid out there and some tapes, audio tapes. And he had run across a friend there in the apartment complex who had given him some of these motivational books and motivational tapes. And he had spent the day listening to the tapes and reading the books. And he had me read from those books and listen to some of those tapes. And I did. I sat there for about an hour and I read some of them. And when I got through, he said, "What do you think?" I said, "It's great, Ed. It's great." And then I just lowered sort of the boom on him. I said, "Ed, do you know where all this good stuff came from?" He looked at me. His Bible was sitting over there. Over there. I said, "Every good thing that you got from those books came from the book of Proverbs." And you could see him just, "Oh. One book? One book?" And everything that was good in these 10 or 15 books and tapes was sitting over there in a book that he hadn't opened. You want to be wise as a husband, as a wife, as a parent? You want to be really wise and open that book. And that will contain the answers to your questions and the solutions to your problems. Along with this, and sort of along the same line. Look in chapter 9, verse 2. "In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, observed in the books the number of the years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. Now the books that he talks about here, I think pretty clear. These weren't books written by mere men. These were written by men, by Jeremiah and men like him. Daniel was a man who knew God's will. And as a result of that, he showed great wisdom. I talked about this Sunday at one of our studies. I don't remember which one. So I'll just briefly touch upon it again. There's something that really concerns me among brethren. And that is, going back to what we said just a minute ago, seeking wisdom from God. There seems to be with some people more familiarity with books written by men than books written by inspired men. We know about what this religious author wrote and what this religious author wrote. But when it comes to what inspired men wrote, there's not the kind of depth of knowledge that there needs to be. Let me suggest, and again, I'm not saying it's wrong. In fact, Carol's this week, I found a couple of books that I'm going to go home and buy. I think they're that good. That's fine. And it's good to have books around. But the main book needs to be the book. And this was Daniel. He sought wisdom from God. And because he knew God's will, he was the kind of wise man that God approved of, and he was held in high esteem because of that. He put God's will above men. Chapter 6 and verse 13. Then they answered and spoke before the king. Now, he's talking here about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but you know that Daniel had this same attitude. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you. The men here who were the servants of the king. They answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but he keeps making his petition three times a day. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, all four of those young men, and those weren't the only four. There were many, many others that came into that first group of people who were the captives from Judah. And they said that Daniel pays no attention to you. How I'd like to get off on this. It's easy to read this verse, and so easy to difficult to apply it. Putting God's will above man's and paying no attention to some people. There are some people that we need to pay no attention to. When it comes to a choice between God's will and what human conclusions are, let me just be blunt here. Sometimes we shouldn't pay any attention to the brethren. Sometimes we shouldn't pay any attention to what the brethren like. Sometimes we shouldn't pay any attention to what elders say. And I'm not trying to stir up problems with people. God's will trumps the will of the elders. God's will trumps what brethren say, what notable preachers say, what occurs and what is published in papers. I don't care. Pay no attention to it. You make yourself a student of God's will. You know God's will. And then it doesn't make any difference what anybody else says. Putting God's will above the will of your spouse, your children, your parents, it says, tremendous application. There are some times when we simply need to do what Daniel did and pay no attention to what comes from those sources. make up our mind that we're going to be students of God's will, and we're going to follow God's will. It doesn't make any difference what everybody else is doing. God's will comes first. Daniel trusted God. Chapter 6, verse 23. Then the king was very pleased. He gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. That is the lion's den. And so Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. No doubt the things that Daniel was subjected to, and that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were subjected to, it made no sense from a human reasoning standpoint not to bow down to the image. It made no sense. We're captives. These guys can kill us. And so it makes sense to bow down to the image. It makes sense to pray to the king. But Daniel trusted God. We talked Sunday evening about the providence of God. And all through Daniel, you see the providence of God working. And I think we would be surprised in our personal lives, the things that would take place in our lives, the way that God would take care of us, and the provisions that he would make for us, and the blessings that he would bestow upon us, if we would be like little 3- and 4-year-old children in relation to their parents. They trust their parents. There's a time it changes later, but there's a time in the parent-child relationship when mom and dad can do no wrong. They can say no wrong. And we trust them for everything, implicitly for everything. And from the time that we are little children, from the time that we're old men, like Daniel was in the den, he was 85-something years old at this time. As we'll see later in our study, he trusted God all those years. No wonder that Daniel was a man after God's own heart. Or rather, he was a man of high esteem, like David was a man after God's own heart. He was a man of high esteem because he trusted God. He was a man who was held in high esteem because of his personal character. Chapter 1. And verse 8. Remember that when Daniel and his friends got down into Babylon, that first group of captives, and they began to be subjected to all kinds of things, a heathen education, all of the things. They changed their names from Jewish names to Babylonian names. And Daniel and his friends didn't object to that. They had no problem with that. But there came a time when the Babylonians wanted to subject them to a heathen diet. Now, I don't know what all was involved here, but evidently it involved something that violated the conscience of Daniel. Daniel, verse 8 of chapter 1, Daniel made up his mind he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Daniel made up his mind to something. Here's what conviction is all about. Conviction and not compromising involves making up our minds, being determined that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. And there is not a thing that anyone can do to cause me to compromise those convictions. It's unfortunate that the word stubborn has taken on a negative connotation. I used to tell my daughter, who redefined stubborn in my life, I used to tell her, nothing wrong with being stubborn. Stubborn is the stuff that conviction is made out of. A person does not have conviction until they reach the stubborn stage, until they reach the obstinate stage, in a good sense. They're just like a post set in concrete. They are immovable. Now, you can do with stubborn and obstinate wrong things. I understand that. I'm talking now about being stubborn, about being obstinate. When it comes to God's will, let me ask you, have you ever just made up your mind about something in God's will? This is the way it is. And I don't care what anybody else says about this way it is. And I'm like that post set in concrete. You're not going to move me. I'll be willing to talk to you about it. But it's the truth. And I've looked at it every way possible, and I've seen no other alternative. That's just it. That was Daniel. He made up his mind. And it's unfortunate that a lot of times in our lives as Christians, we go through and we waffle back and forth on significant issues. We things that really are life, spiritual life and death issues. Well, I don't know. And one time I believe this. Well, a year later I believe that. And then I go back over here. But there's no firmness. There's no stability. Daniel wasn't that way. Daniel was a man of high esteem because of his personal character. He was a man of conviction, made up his mind. And he would not change anything that he believed to be God's will. He was somebody who expressed his faith positively. Chapter 6 and verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, this document that required men to bow down to and pray to the king, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. When Daniel found out that the order had been signed to bow down to and pray to the king, what did he do? He stomped his feet. He have a fit? No. He simply expressed his faith in a positive way and went right on acting the way that he had been acting. We sometimes take this negative thing and feel like that every time that we stand up for something, we have to be, and I'll talk about this in just a moment, we have to be very negative. No. Just keep on doing what's right. That's what Daniel did. And then look at the next thing that he did in his personal character. He was courteous and respectful. Let's look at some verses and make some comments. Daniel made up his mind, we read this a moment ago, he made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission. He sought permission. It was a courteous thing. He sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Look in verse 12 of chapter 1. Please test your servants for 10 days and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then in chapter 6 and verse 21, Daniel spoke to the king. I don't know that these words would have come out of my mouth with the king that would put me in a lion's den. What did Daniel say? You awful piece. O king, live forever. O king, live forever. I don't know that I could have called. I don't know what I would have done. That's what Daniel did. He was courteous and respectful. I don't know where this got started. I really don't. I'm not that much of a history buff when it comes to things among brethren. I think I know, but I'm not going to go there. That whenever you stand for truth, whenever you take a real firm stand, you've got to be mean. You've got to be ugly. You've got to be sarcastic. Wasn't Daniel? Not at all. About 2 years ago, and I'll make a long story short, but about 2 years ago, I had a chance to sit down with a Jehovah's Witness. He and I had 3 studies together before he very courteously requested that I not come back to his house. And we parted on very courteous terms, but I did not move him about his attitude toward Jesus and the Holy Spirit, and he didn't move me. But for three sessions, we engaged in a very, very frank study. And I found myself in a very unique position. This man was 95 years old. And he had a grasp as far as academic knowledge of the Bible. He didn't open his Bible. He was telling me, turn to Ezekiel, turn to Daniel. He quoted the passage. Now, he misapplied it, I think. But I was in the position of having to tell him, and I did tell him. I thought he was going to lose his soul. And he thanked me for that. He told me the same thing. I said, one of us is going to be lost. He said, I know. And I think you are. And I said, well, of course I think you are. But I had to watch myself, because here was a man who was the age, if my father had been living, he was the age of my dad. And I had to, on the one hand, be very firm, but at the same time, even though he was totally in error, I had to be respectful. I had to be courteous. I went to a debate a number of years ago in which a gospel preacher made a total fool of himself. I was embarrassed. Absolutely embarrassed. He was debating an old denominational preacher, and the denominational preacher was advocating error. No question about that. And the gospel preacher was defending what I think was right. The older denominational fellow was about the age of this gospel preacher's father. And I nearly got up and walked out of the debate. It was disgraceful. I doubt that that gospel preacher would have ever talked to his dad that way. If I had talked to my daddy that way, I'd be a cripple today. I'm not joking. Daniel was courteous. Daniel was respectful. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but it's needful to do. Whenever we stand for truth, whenever we show no compromise, we stand for our convictions. Let's do that. Let's be firm. But at the same time, let's be courteous. Now, was Daniel one who was afraid to speak plainly? Oh, absolutely not. Look in chapter 5. And beginning with verse 22. Yet you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart. Now he's talking to the leader of a nation. He's talking to somebody who is holding him captive, who could take his life. Yet you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. What had happened to his daddy? He had reviewed all that happened in Nebuchadnezzar. But you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines had been drinking wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand, but the God in whose hand are your life breath and in all your ways, you have not glorified. Is that blunt language? Is that in-your-face language? Is that language which is saying, you've really made a mess of things, king of the nation? Absolutely. But I don't get the impression that in doing that, that Daniel was ugly, that he was mean-spirited, at the same time that he could express himself harshly, he could also do it in a way that was kind. I've told this story, if I've ever told it here. The worst chewing out I ever got in my life, the very worst, was from my grandfather. I'll not give you specifics of what I did. She never raised her voice. Never. It was a phone conversation. She never raised her voice. She, of course, did not use any bad language. She just told me, quite frankly, what she thought of me and what I'd done. Very calmly, And as she talked, even then I was over 6 foot, and I just kept getting smaller and smaller. You don't have to raise your voice. You don't have to be sarcastic. You don't have to be rude. Just speak plainly. And that will convey the message. That's what Daniel did, and he was highly esteemed by heaven because of that. He lived a life above reproach. Chapter 6 and verse 4. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful. And no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Am I to conclude from this verse that Daniel never made a mistake in his life? Is that what you would conclude? Not unless he was the Jesus Christ of the Old Testament. I'm not trying to. No. I'm sure Daniel did. But he lived a life in which he tried every day to stay just as above reproach as he could possibly be. And when people began to investigate him, they simply couldn't find anything that they could say, okay, here's what he's doing now. And he's violating law. Couldn't do it. Could not do it. When it comes time, and I'll just pay my respects to this and then leave town. When it comes time to appoint elders, I don't know where. We check our reasoning in somewhere, and we think that if a man ever made a mistake, forget it. If we can go back 40 years, we find, there you did. You'll never be an elder here. Wow. Wonder how Peter made the cut. You know Peter was an elder, don't you? 1 Peter chapter 5. Could you find dirt on Peter? Oh, ho, ho. How many sermons have been preached on the Apostle Peter and his denial of the Lord and his hypocrisy later on? And yet, he was an elder in a congregation in the latter part of his life. Because he met the qualifications talked about by Paul, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. He was somebody who was above reproach. In his current life, as people looked at him now, the past was the past, and he had risen above it. And he was above reproach in his current life, with the flaws and mistakes that he probably still had. And he could serve God's people as an elder. Daniel was that kind of a man. I have all ideas. In the past, I'm sure Daniel did things that were sinful. Know that he did. All his sin falls short of the glory of God. But when you take his life on balance, he was a man above reproach. He was somebody who prayed. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. I know we've looked at this verse before. We'll look at it again. When Daniel knew the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. That was a special place. And the windows were kept open toward Jerusalem. Let me just ask you. You keep the windows of your life open toward heaven? Daniel had his windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks. What did Daniel pray? Chapter 9 and chapter 10. We don't have time to read all those verses, but I do want to read beginning in chapter 9 and beginning with verse 3. Now listen to the content of the prayer on this occasion. So I gave my attention to the Lord God to seek him by prayer and supplication, with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. Fasting, sackcloth, and ashes are a way. There wouldn't be anything wrong with doing that today if you wanted to. You don't have to, but you could. It's a way of showing penitence and sorrow for sin and humility. I prayed to the Lord my God and confessed and said, Alas, O Lord, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. We have sinned, including himself in that, committed iniquity, acted wickedly, and rebelled, even turning aside from your commandments and ordinances. Moreover, we have not listened to your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, our fathers, and all the people of the land. Then in chapter 10, verse 2, In those days I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed. And then you go on to talk and you find about the prayer that he prays there. Daniel prayed, and as he prayed, he acknowledged his sins and he showed great humility. And he prayed on behalf of his people. We talked the other night in our study on the providence of God, the great power there is in prayer. One of the things, and let me just say this about prayer, and I don't want to get strung out on this, but too often we feel like that prayer has to be at a special place, church building, at a special time, Sunday and Wednesday, a certain bodily position, and you have to begin the prayer with Our Father who art in heaven and end it with, In the name of Jesus Christ we pray, Amen. And you'll not find that anywhere in the New Testament. You can pray washing dishes. You can pray mowing a yard. You can pray driving a car. You can pray in your bed at night without uttering a word, just letting the thoughts of your heart go up toward God. You don't have to hold your... And nothing wrong, by the way, nothing wrong with getting in certain bodily positions to pray. That's fine. All I'm saying, that doesn't have to be done. And when somebody just concludes a prayer with Amen, doesn't mean it's an unscriptural prayer. There is no formula for prayer. There is no certain, you've got to start it this way and you have to end it that way. You'd have a difficult time finding anything like that in the New Testament. It's just not there. Ever just talk to God like you would talk to somebody else? Now, I don't mean that we put God on the human level. That's not it. But we just open our heart. We simply, God, I don't understand this. I'm having a problem with that. And just talk to God like you would talk to somebody else. Just talk. And let the words of your mouth and the meditation of your heart go up before God. That's what Daniel is doing here in Daniel 6 and 10. And these other passages, Daniel was a man of prayer. And I can't feature, since he prayed 3 times in a day, I can't feature Daniel not praying on a regular basis. I recently taught the life of Paul. And one of the things that just hit me, and I'd never seen this before, never had done it before. And we went through the epistles of Paul, I was impressed for the first time in my life at how many times Paul in his epistles said, I'm praying for you. Whether it was individuals or local churches, Paul said, I'm praying for you, and I'm praying for you people over here. Now, if Paul was serious about that, and he was, I'm not expressing any doubt. If Paul was serious about that, if Paul really did, and I believe that he did, pray for all those people that he said he was praying for, you read through there. How much time during the day do you think Paul spent in prayer? Read the epistles of Paul. Just look, go through, do the study of the prayers of Paul. How much time do you think that Paul must have spent in praying if he prayed for everybody he said he was going to? And then when you get that amount of time figured up on one side of a sheet of paper, take a look at how much time. Maybe this represents me. I don't represent you. How much time you spend in prayer, or I spend in prayer compared to Paul. And that's the reason I say you don't have to get in a certain position. You can pray any time, like Paul did and like Daniel did. And because of that, he was a man of high esteem. He expressed sorrow for his sin in the passages that we read a moment ago. Not only his sin, but the sin of the nation. Then in chapter 2, and in verse 19, and going through verse 23, Daniel gave God the glory and was humble. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in the night vision. Then Daniel blessed, spoke well of the God of heaven. Daniel said, "Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him." We read these verses a moment ago. I'm not going to reread them. These verses, among other things, not only teach that Daniel sought wisdom from God, these verses illustrate the fact that Daniel was somebody that was humble. He didn't take credit. He didn't take the glory for interpreting the king's dream. I don't know if fixing to step out on thin ice here, but there are too many times preachers and elders, but especially preachers, because they're in the limelight before people, can have a real Muhammad Ali complex. You know what that is? I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest. I've known one or two like that. We have nothing to boast about. We have nothing to be arrogant about. Any abilities that we have, God gave it to us. Any knowledge that we have, God gave it to us. Any wisdom that we have is because of God. And I have nothing of which to boast, not at all. Daniel was highly esteemed because of the impact of his life on others. In chapter 2, verse 47, we begin to see some passages in which we're told about the impact that Daniel had on leaders of nations. He caused them to glorify God. Chapter 2, verse 47. The king answered Daniel and said, "Surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, chapter 4, verse 34, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my reason returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And no one can ward off his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At that time my reason returned to me, and my majesty and splendor were restored to me for the glory of my kingdom. And my counselors and my nobles began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. And then, 70 years later, Darius the king wrote to all the people, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." Now, did Nebuchadnezzar and Darius and others, did they become devout believers in God? That's not my point. But they were impressed with Daniel's God, and they spoke highly of Daniel's God. And if we want to be men and women of high esteem, we've got to cause others to glorify God as these men glorified Daniel's God. I may have told this story, and I make no apology for repeating it because it had an impact upon my life. When I lived down in, back out in Texas for a number of years, there was a man in the church there named Charles Garner. Charles was, for so many reasons, one of the most unique men I've ever met in my life. After moving to Corpus Christi, just a year or so afterwards, Charles died of cancer. And I went back down to McAllen for his memorial service. It was over an hour long. Men and women both spoke. People who had known him in church situations, men and women who had known him on the job. Out of all those people, there was one person who said something that I hope I'll never forget. It was a woman who had worked with Charles 60, 80 hours a week for a number of years. And here's what she said. She said, if Jesus Christ ever comes back to this earth and lives as a man, he will come back as Charles Garner. She wasn't being blasphemous. She was simply saying, Charles reminds me of Jesus. Let me ask you the big question. Can your wife say that about you, husband? Vice versa. Are you in the kind of relationship in marriage that the husband says that about his wife, and the wife says that about the husband? What about your children? They say that about you? Mom and dad are living like Jesus. They remind me of Jesus. My grandparents remind me of Jesus. Your co-workers say about you what this woman said about Charles. Something to think about. Are we causing other people to glorify God by what they see and hear in us? That's what Daniel did. And he was highly esteemed by God because of it. And finally, he was highly esteemed because of the consistency of his character. Sometimes in looking at the book of Daniel, he's just growing up as a kid. I always thought Daniel always in the book is a kid, a teenager. But he wasn't. By the time we get to the end of the book and Daniel's in the lion's den, he's an 85-year-old man. From the time he was a teenager, he came into Babylon in that first group of captives until the end of his life, whatever that was, in his 80s or 90s. Daniel was characterized by all of these things. A proper attitude toward God, a personal character that was impeccable, having a great impact on the life of others every day that he lived. And that's why Daniel is called the man of high esteem. You feel like you can't have that approval of God? Maybe it's because your life's not right with it. Maybe it's because there's something missing here. I can't be a person highly esteemed by God until I've obeyed his will. You need to obey God in whatever way and have God look upon you tonight and say, O man, O woman of high esteem, we encourage you to take whatever steps you need to take in doing that. We encourage you as we stand and sing.